You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily podcast on the Minnesota Timberwolves, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Welcome, 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 ladies and gentlemen, to another Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I am your host, Colton Molesky, and I am joined in studio this time by Dane Moore. Dane, first time we've done a podcast in the same room together. It's pretty magical.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. It's good to be here.
Dare I say it's maybe as magical as what happens? No, just kidding. Almost on par. It's about the same level of magic. I don't know. It's about the halfway season for NBA teams, so let's hand out some grades, some good old-fashioned grading.
Love it. You're still in college. I'm not. Haven't got a grade in a while. And well, I guess you're
thanks,
well,
thanks
you can
for
grade me, too. We can go through the whole roster, and then you can just maybe grade my writing, my podcasting, and
oh boy,
general disposition.
You know, this is not the podcast to do face-to-face. Can you go and call in? I'm just kidding. So we're going to go through a note is that we gave grades for all the players on the roster. Now, these are the players that did play minutes, so guys like Justin Patton, who have been on the roster but didn't play any, get any floor time. He was not graded, not really a fair way to grade players when they haven't gotten a chance to play. But we graded all the players that have played any minutes in a game. We were surprising each other with the grades we're giving out, and we'll see how this goes. We're going to start out, you said you wanted to start with bad grades first, wanted to get right to negativity in the morning.
Just right to negativity. Bright and early this morning, it's the best way to wake up, right?
Exactly. So Cole Aldrich is who I'm starting out with an F grade. I just put contract. He's making way too much money. Making way too much.
We were talking about this before on how Cole Aldrich makes $89,000 per game, and he plays 82 games a season, and that is almost the exact same amount of money that Case Keenum makes per game. And he
doesn't even play 82 of the games.
He plays 16 games, yes. No, good for Cole to get that money, but that contract is turned into a bummer quite quickly, though I do think the Wolves will be off of it by next season. Only $2 million of it is guaranteed next year, so if Cole isn't moved at the deadline, which I think is at least a possibility, then this is probably going to be the hometown boys last year in Minnesota, as he'd likely be waived following.
You'd think so, and you think that he's one of those pieces where I think the Timberwolves maybe give up, if they do trade somebody at the trade deadline, they maybe give up a couple extra pieces to have somebody take on this contract.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of nice, too, to have, if you do want to go get that $10 million a year type of player, that you have a contract that you can give up so as to match the money. Like, yes, that team's not going to be thrilled to give it back, but if Cole's not there and you have this $10 million a year type player, you would need to attach a Gorgui Dieng to it, which, I mean, maybe that's not a great contract either, but it's not an asset, but it could be used as a tool at the trade deadline.
Yeah, for sure.
Definitely an F, though.
Definitely an F. The other F grade I had, the only other F grade I had, Shabazz Muhammad. Just disappointing the lack of growth offensively. He still is one of those guys who's going to kind of suck up possessions, and he's a sporadic shooter at best.
It would be interesting to see, you know, knock on wood, if somebody, one of the wings got hurt, if a Jamal Crawford went down, I'm pretty sure he's invincible. But
after this many years in the NBA, they give you a potion in back rooms, and you don't go out.
He's just good, but he's always fallen down after trying to draw the and one on his jump shots. So maybe he rolls an ankle or something. I wonder if Shabazz had to play, what he would, you know, look like now. Obviously, it wasn't good at the beginning of the year, but, like, kind of generally speaking, the Wolves weren't good. I wonder if he could, if the need was there, fit into a 10-minute-a-game role, or kind of with not getting played at all and coming in at the end of garbage time, it seems like he's the type of player who just can't possibly touch the floor. He's just out. He's just out of the picture for the Wolves completely.
Yeah, it definitely seems that way, and literally the only time we've seen him after, what was it, October, is when it's a blowout.
He hasn't played a meaningful minute in 2 months.
Yeah, so definitely an F for him. Moving on, I have no D grades to hand out. I do have a C to to Andrew Wiggins. Let's see. I have a hot take to go along with this as well. But I gave him a C because it took him a really long time to find his role as the third guy. And I feel like it did not take Towns that long to fit into the second man role. Now, maybe that's an easier role to go into, but it really took Wiggins. And now it seems like he's getting a little traction in that spot. But it took him a while to figure out how to play as the third best guy on the team. And so I gave him a big detractor for that.
Would you say he has figured out?
I think now you're seeing in the over the last couple of weeks. And so that's what I'm saying. If maybe this happened a month ago instead of 2 weeks ago, I would bump him up to a B, but it took him a really long time. It took him the whole month of December to try and fit into that third man. And I think I got to give him a knock for that.
I think largely he is the same player he was. I do think we've seen more engagement on defense. I think that's, you know, props to the veterans and the team just being generally more engaged on defense. So I think a C is fair if you had high expectations for him to take that next step and really be a key piece of the big three in Minnesota. But has he regressed this season? No. I think he's still kind of figuring out that third role. I think there's some discomfort, there's some mental things going on. The free throw shooting is the most inexplicable thing. And I think that when you see a huge change in free throw percentage, there's something going on mentally there. And if you go down Andrew Wiggins' career, it's shocking how similar his free throw percentages are. It's 76%, 76.1%, 76%. Those are his first 3 years. And this year he's shooting 62.4, which is, I mean, that's the numbers you'll see out of a center who's not a good free throw shooter. So there's definitely a mental element to that too. Also, he's just not getting to the line at the rate in which he used to. And that was amongst his detractors in past seasons, his ability to get to the basket and get to the free throw line and get some high percentage points in that way was a positive. I think with Wiggins, and I've kind of been saying this all year, that the key to him becoming a star type, approaching all-star level player, not if it's this year, but at any point, is for him to be a volume three-point shooter who shoots close to 40% from three. Yeah. And I think if that weapon ever comes out, like, watch out for this team, because I don't think Jimmy Butler's not going anywhere. Karl Towns isn't going anywhere anytime soon. Those guys are already huge weapons. I just with Wiggins' disposition, I can't ever see him truly being a great defender. Mm-hmm. I think he can definitely become passable on skill set alone, but just if he can really weaponize himself in the way that you kind of saw James Harden once he moved to Houston, just by really increasing that volume of high percentage shots and shooting them at a high rate, that's a dangerous weapon. And Andrew Wiggins has that skill set. He's a freak, and he has a great jump shot.
Yeah, and that kind of leads into my hot take for him too. And it is that
hot take.
I think that Wiggins will be an all-star, but not on the Timberwolves. I think that when he makes an all-star team, he will not be a Minnesota Timberwolf.
So, it's the odds man, the gambling man that you are. If we are picking the year in which Andrew Wiggins is no longer on the Timberwolves, what would you say? He's starting a five-year, $148 million contract next season. So, technically, he should be on the books through age. What would that be, 27?
Yeah, 27. But because he's only 22 right now is kind of what plays into this. And if you go off of all like the advanced metrics, you hit that peak at around that 25, 26, 27 range and kind of ride it out till about 29, 30. Mm-hmm. And so really that is me kind of anticipating that for the better part of his five-year contract, he's under the shadow of Butler, and then that moves to under the shadow of what a lot of people still predict MVP level kind of player is in Towns. And so I think he probably either gets 4 years or plays out the entire 5 year contract and then goes to another team. And that team is going to be less successful, and he's going to be really good on that team, and he's going to make an all-star team then.
Just kind of amidst my personal questioning of the contract when it came out, and I very well understand the reasons in which it's a calculated risk you had to take to give him that contract. Those were his demands. The first contract after your rookie deal is the biggest gamble a team signs with any player. You go from the best bang for your buck deal that there is in a rookie contract, and then these players aren't really known. I mean, they had to sign Wiggins at 22, clearly before he was known to this extension. But I was talking to Chris Axman, who hosts the Almighty Baller podcast, and right after that, the end of the summer, and he was just like, he said to me, and I think this was wise, that Andrew Wiggins is the type of player, even if he doesn't really figure it out in the next 2 years, that an Anthony Davis or a CJ McCollum or someone like that is traded for, you know, where that team who's getting, you know, say Davis demands a trade, and obviously this doesn't perfectly fit with the Wolves, but in theory, that star type player, you know, demands their trade, and Andrew Wiggins is the type of asset that you could believe in enough as still being young. Maybe it's in 2 years, 3 years when he's 25, that you could say, yeah, well, we've got to move on from this star, and Andrew Wiggins will take a risk on as the main piece in the deal coming back. So obviously it would have never been a good idea for the Wolves to let him walk. It's unfortunate given their financial future, how much they had to commit to him. But even if for the dollar Andrew Wiggins isn't a bargain or isn't marginally producing that much, there's always going to be an intrinsic value to Andrew Wiggins and his athleticism and skill set that you watch him play, and you could be convinced that in the right place Andrew Wiggins could take off, or maybe he's just progressing slowly like a DeMar DeRozan did. Like, really, 22-year-old DeMar DeRozan, is that different than Andrew Wiggins? It's always been somewhere between Gay and DeRozan, and as time has gone on, that gap has widened as DeMar DeRozan is playing as an MVP candidate. But there's still obviously hope in Andrew Wiggins, and it'll be fascinating to see if and when those trade conversations do happen, that we'll actually get a good idea of what is Andrew Wiggins' value, what is his perceived value amongst the other 29 teams. What would somebody be willing to give him? Do assets need to be attached to Andrew Wiggins to move him? That's gonna be fascinating. Hopefully that's not. Hopefully he figures it out, and next year he's playing for the Wolves, shooting 40% from three, and an all-star caliber type player. But he just remains the most fascinating piece on this Wolves team of just confusion.
No, yeah, definitely I would say the biggest question mark still on this roster. I think you know pretty much what everybody else is for the most part. We're going to get to the B grades after a quick break. All right, so there's a lot of these, so I'm gonna kind of clump these into the guys that I think are most similar. I have Jones.
I can't believe Aaron Brooks is an A or a B. This is awesome.
I actually have I have Brooks as a B. We're going to save him, though, because I know you and I are both very excited about him. But we have Tyus Jones, Marcus Georges-Hunt. I have both as B-level guys. I think that they're really good at wanting to make the right play as opposed to padding their stats. And they're really terrified of making a big mistake, which I think is a valuable thing for some guards coming off the bench, some guys who can play some fairly solid D. I think Hunt is definitely not as good as Jones right now, but I think he could develop into somebody like a Jones. The one knock I had on Tyus was I think that when he's feeling it a little bit, I wanted to see him shoot a couple more times maybe. There's times where he looks like he's really confident with the ball in his hands, and he doesn't score as much as I would. I'd love to see him like go off and go back and forth with somebody's second unit guard, because I think he could win that battle both scoring wise and on the defensive side. And so I'd like to see more of that from him. And then just Hunt, you just gotta watch him play more. Like, he needs to get more minutes maybe to hit that next step and be there with Jones.
Right. With Georges Hunt, we'll get to Tyus too. That's probably a larger topic, but his contract got guaranteed for the rest of the season last week. And I was kind of writing about that, how they had the opportunity to kind of move on from him or stay. And I wanted to write, like, wanted to put in a couple paragraphs about what Marcus George's hunt is good at and find some video clips or something. And it's like, you know, I'm going through his possessions and I'm like, he just really hasn't played that much. And when he plays, he doesn't do that much. To your point, it's not negative, but Marcus George's hunt is he's a filler, you know, and he doesn't mess things up, and that's good. He's shown some impressive stints. I thought the last game last Wednesday against Oklahoma City, he did a good job on a 5-minute stint on Paul George, staying in front of him. He seems like he can totally be that type of player. It's funny though, you see some people being like, well, I mean, Jimmy Butler, his first year with Tom Thibodeau, he only played like 350 minutes. Whoa. Let's pump the brakes on the Jimmy and George's hunt comparison.
I'd be happy if he just turned out like a Tyus.
Yep, sure, anything. I think the biggest thing I've noticed with George's hunt this year is, just from being around the team a little bit, is how much all the guys on that team really, really seem to, there's a little brother element to it. And they were his first game when he debuted, talking to, it was like a game where Towns had 35 points or something. And one of the media members asked Jamal about Towns' performance. He was like, honestly, Towns can do that every night. For me, I was so happy to see Marcus go out and like play, you know, 9 good minutes or whatever. And he's just, he seems to be an important piece. Timberwolves are finally at this point where a little bit of the off-court production stuff starts to matter. I think we've seen that with Crawford. Crawford isn't a metrically positive player. There's certainly issues in his game, but you can't ignore the element of some of that locker room cohesion and the guys who do serve as that, you know, proverbial glue that you see with Gibson and Butler and Crawford and George's hunt in his own kind of unique way, I think has been important there. And then I guess quickly on Tyus Jones, you want to talk about metrically, statistics wise, like it looks fake, and the sample size isn't massive, but it's pretty big. He's played like 300 minutes with the starters, and it's like the best unit in the NBA. So that's pretty good. I mean, Jeff Teague, when he's been out there too, he's been good. I've kind of remained on the, you know, it's okay if Tyus Jones only plays 16 minutes a game. Well, let's do 32 to Teague, 16 to Jones. And I understand that the Wolves were very good and have been very good with Tyus out there, but it's important to have good players on your bench, and it's okay if they're just on your bench. If I do have one quibble with the Jones usage, it's that I don't understand why these past few games there's been as much, like 5 to 8 minutes a game where Jones and Teague have been off the floor. And they've kind of rolled with the like Butler/Crawford backcourt. I think Jones deserves to be getting every minute that Jeff Teague's off. And sometimes you want to have the bigger unit out there to punish a smaller team. But I would like to see both of them or either of them on the court at all times. The poorest man's Chris Paul, James Harden, you know, keeping one of them on the floor all 48 minutes.
That's a bold comparison right there. I'm going to stay away from that one. But I do have some other B category players. I have Belly as a B guy. I have Gorgie at B. And I also have Teague and Brooks as B guys. Now, I think these are two different categories. I have Belly and Gorgie. I think that they just there's something to be said about the guys that really fall into a role well. And so I'm not going to knock Gorgie for kind of taking a step back from last year because you bring in Gibson. I think he's done a good job just accepting that and coming off the bench. And he's had some really good games, particularly against teams like the Pelicans when they need somebody to be a strong inside guy. He really shows up in those games. And then Belly, I think that he shot really well early on. And the one detractor from him really was the injury, that you didn't see him really kind of build on that as the year progressed because of the injury and the nagging lower body stuff.
Yeah, I think it's tough. It's a tale of kind of two stints here with Belly. Like, I think Belly's definitely not been in a B recently. I think he's been an issue at times, a liability. Defensively, I see him as a liability, and we've talked about it on Wolves Wired before. I have some concerns come playoff time that the minutes that he's on the floor – the opposing team will attack if it's the Oklahoma City Thunder with, you know, Carmelo Anthony or the Blazers with Al-Farouq Aminu or the Nuggets with Paul Millsap, that type of power forward, or God forbid, Belly playing the three, like that's going to be taken advantage of because amidst his improvements shooting, and I love his ability to distribute with it given his size, I really do have concerns about him defensively as a player, but God, they need 3-point shooting as bad as anything, and he's proven this year to actually be a shooter. Like, he came in with the label of, you're like, oh, white Euro guys bombing threes, like, but he wasn't doing it. Like, he did not do it in his first years. He was not shooting a high percentage, and we've just seen a confident version of him early on in the season. And a confident Belly is dangerous. I mean, because he does have the ability to not only be a stretch four, but also a playmaking four. So,
well, that's the thing too, is that I really thought about putting him at C, but between him and Crawford, like, the bench might actually stretch the floor a little. Those guys might stretch the floor a little better than a bunch of the starters. And so I think you really have to put him at a B on this team just because 3-point shooting isn't really
right.
What this entire roster top to bottom is known for. So when you have somebody who is confident enough now this season to do that, I'll take some of those defensive woes to get a little bit of a stretch when he's out there.
Yeah. And that I think kind of goes to my regular season postseason point. It's really important, and maybe the defense won't be taken advantage of in the regular season as much as I do think it'll be taken advantage of in the postseason, but it's the regular season right now. We got 40 more regular season games. So Belly can be a crucial part to the bench stability, cutting off a couple minutes a game for the rest of the season for Taj Gibson would be a good thing. I mean, finding ways in which to do that, he's definitely a very important regular season piece, and I just am concerned about how he fits in the playoffs.
Yeah, and then hitting on Teague and Brooks. First of all, Brooks, I think he's just a good glue guy. I think he's like
fun.
He's a fun guy to watch. He's always explosive. I haven't seen him do anything really detrimental when he does play. I know he doesn't play a ton of minutes, but when he's out there, I think he builds the camaraderie of the team. I see him on the bench all the time, hyping everybody up about plays. I point to when they're at the Cavs, or when they're playing the Cavs, and you have the block on Tyus, and Brooks is the one getting in LeBron's face. Like, I feel like he's just the guy who's got everybody else's back, and I think that's really important when you have guys like the head coach or Butler coming down on people about how they play, which is something you need. You need people to keep guys in check, but you also need that guy like Brooks who's going to be right there getting all these guys back on the same page just camaraderie-wise. I think he's really good for the locker room.
He's
a good balance.
I agree with that. He's a goofy guy. I've seen him like come up and like tickle players when they're getting interviewed by the media, like just like weird stuff like that. I like, as a basketball player, an NBA basketball player, Aaron Brooks is not a B, but
no, I recognize that.
Yeah, no, I know you do. Just kind of talking. I mean, he was signed for the minimum late in the game. Like he's a fringe NBA player entering the season, but when Jeff Teague went down, you know, panic ensued for a lot of Timberwolves fans with, oh, crap, Aaron Brooks has to play, you know, 10 minutes a game now at least. And I think Aaron Brooks is the example of one of those players who, if you just go to their advanced metrics part of basketballreference.com, you're going to see a lot of negatives for 10 years of negatives. And the thing is, though, I mean, then this is just was kind of like digging back into my memory bank of remembering times where in stints he was clearly a positive. And I don't mean just like in a 10-minute chunk of a game, but there's been extended periods of time in his career where a role has opened up and he has been serviceable for 20 games and maybe even good if he got things rolling. Like, he's totally a feel type player, gets things going. And that's why I think it was really tough when he was just playing like 3 minutes a game and he'd have like three turnovers and he'd get yanked and wouldn't come back in there. But you saw once he started getting 12 to 15 minutes a game, a real role for 2 weeks, it was passable.
Yeah.
And I just think it takes a certain type of player to be able to be like, okay, just go give me 3 minutes right now and then like sit down. Like, there's no rhythm to that. And that's never something Aaron Brooks has really done. What he's been a lot of his career is like a third a third string point guard or a backup guard who has been given a role when an injury happened. One anecdote being when he was on the 09 Rockets, who won like 54 games, it was Jeremy Lin, Pat Beverly, and Aaron Brooks was their third point guard. It's the kind of same thing. He signed with them to be their third point guard. Jeremy Lin goes down. Aaron Brooks comes in for 15 games, and it's Aaron Brooks and Pat Beverly, and they, you know, it was good. Aaron Brooks was great. He's playing like 26 minutes a night there, and you're like, wow, they got something out of him. Jeremy Lin comes back. Patrick Beverly goes down like a week there afterwards, and Aaron Brooks is back into this 20-minute a game role. And so he does have experience in just kind of that stepping in stepping into a role he maybe doesn't deserve and fitting in there. So I'm not freaked out. I wasn't like freaked out when Jeff Teague went down. Aaron Brooks isn't going to boost your team X amount of wins produced or whatever, but he's not going to kill you.
Either.
Exactly. Yeah. I could have said that in 10 seconds rather than 10 minutes, but I do think that I agree with the B. I think a lot of people would probably push back on us a little bit on that, but whatever. I love him jumping around on the sidelines. He's a goof.
Yeah, I think you need that guy too, as well as on the bench. You need somebody like that. Teague, just quickly on him, I think that there's a level of consistency that he still can hit that I don't think that he hit very often. You'd see like for a week he was really solid, and then he'd have two games where it was kind of funky for him and he was a little out of whack. So that's what held him to a B for me instead of an A. Other than that, though, I really don't have too many complaints about him. He had the injury, which is unavoidable. You can't knock a guy for that. And he's had some really great games, too, for the team.
That's what he's always been, you know? Is like, and I can't say I was watching 40 Hawks games a year, you know, back in the day, but, you know, that's what you turn on a Hawks game, you watch a Hawks game, and you maybe get really good Jeff Teague and would clearly be, you know, conducting the offense in a dynamic way. And then at times he would be willing to fall back into being the fourth or fifth option out there for the Hawks. And there's skill in that and being able to know when to go and when not to go and some comfort in being a fourth or fifth option. That's to be that good of a player overall and be a fourth option. That's kind of a rare kind of fit. You know what I'm saying?
Is like, especially in the NBA with the egos.
Yes, right. And so, I think you know, when the deal went down, like we don't need to like dig back into all that. Like the money doesn't look great in the grand scheme. The NBA is the ninth highest paid starting point guard in the league, and whatever. But
you got to spend some money though if you want to win right away.
Yeah, he's the biggest free agent signing in Timberwolves history.
And you know what? They're on track to win 52 games.
Right.
From 31 last year. So you got to spend some money in free agency to do this.
But not an A. Not an A. I'm
with you. Not an A. It'll be a solid B guy. Before we get to the A grades, I'm going to take another quick break. So I have four A grades. I have Butler, obvious.
F.
I don't even think we need to talk about that one. Obvious. I've been beating the MVP drum for 3 weeks now. We don't need to talk about obvious.
Real quick, give me your like top five MVPs right now.
Top five MVPs: LeBron James, I have Curry. I think he's been playing so well coming back from the injury that he played himself back into it. Giannis, I still have up there. I have Kyrie Irving, and I have Jimmy Butler.
No Durant. I mean, I'm not saying that I for sure think he's better.
I
than
think
any
that
of those.
Curry has taken back the narrative of this is his team after last year kind of losing it, and Durant being the big signing, obviously.
Narrative driven award.
I believe so much that narrative controls about 75% right. of what goes into this award. And so when people are always about, oh, this stat and this stat, you know what? James Harden should have won last year, and the triple double and the narrative behind that, and the story of not as much the stats, but the story of when was the last time it happened, and the athletes that were competing for the triple doubles versus now, really drove that narrative and drove that MVP. So you can't tell me narrative isn't a huge part of it, and so I think that Curry is thrown back into that because of a bunch of that narrative.
And that's why my suggestion of DeMar DeRozan will never win.
DeMar DeRozan is like my sixth guy right there.
Yeah, I mean they got their 12th. They lost to the Sixers yesterday, and that's only their 12th loss of the year.
They're
which,
a really good team.
Yeah, they're on pace for 24 losses. I mean, yeah, that's Yeah, they could win. They could win 60 games. I mean,
another quick side note: how many times have they restructured not only the bench but the front court on the Raptors while keeping Lowry and DeRozan, and they keep pumping out like top four seeding seasons? It's amazing.
Yeah, you watched the end of their game last night against the Sixers and Embiid, and you had Jonas Valanciunas and Serge Ibaka on the sideline all the way down the stretch. I went with Jakob Poeltl, and that team. There's just a willingness to kind of know. You want to talk about no ego, like that Raptors team. I don't know. I think we've got to such an assumption that they're gonna poop the bed in the in the playoffs and a Lowry and DeRozan. Like some of that's definitely warranted. But I don't know what if Lowry and DeRozan play as well as they have this during the regular season in the postseason. I mean, there's a possibility that is. Maybe that's not even the likelihood. But if they do,
it's going to be tough for the Cavs to beat them.
It's going to be tough for the Cavs. It's going to be tough for Boston to beat them. I mean, that will be – if you got regular season Raptors could go to the finals. Like, I'm not saying they're the favorite, but that's a contender, you know, a conversation worth having. And we totally have digressed from the A grades of the Timberwolves.
No, yeah. Well, and that's why I would have totally been willing to shell out a huge contract for Lowry for the Timberwolves. But that's a whole other thing that we hashed over the summer a lot and doesn't need to be delved into. Towns, I think, is another obvious A, just with the progression he's made on the defensive side and just his physicality on the boards on both ends. The ones I really wanted to talk about, Gibson, I gave an A grade because last season, double doubles, he had 11 total. This season, he already has 13. He's quietly just one of the most solid guys that produces numbers for them night in and night out. I gave him an A because you know what you're going to get from every night, and he goes out there and performs every night. And he's playing in a huge amount more minutes. I think he's up, 12 minutes per game from last season, and he's just stepped in the role and keeps filling in night after night.
If, a player with a sexier name than Taj Gibson was putting up this season and hadn't been in the league for, 10 years prior, if it was a rookie was doing exactly what Taj Gibson would be like, oh man, wait till this guy, if he's, in the next couple of years to develop a 3-point game, he's already a dominant post presence, rebounding, can move his feet on the perimeter. I mean, Taj Gibson is having a phenomenal year if you just stack him up amongst the other power forwards. One stat that I've just been kind of following on his basketball reference pages, I'll just go and look up his shooting within 0 to 3 feet of the basket. He's shooting over 80%. I mean, that's better than
his money.
Yeah, than DeAndre Jordan, who only dunked, peak DeAndre Jordan, who was only dunking. And if you're watching Timberwolves games, Taj gets his fair share of dunks, don't get me wrong, but it's him winning in one-on-one post-up isolation and converting that at 80% is almost unheard of.
It's phenomenal.
If he was shooting a little bit better from the mid-range, that's kind of been an issue, and the test of the corner three hasn't worked out great. But if you him around the basket for playing in the dunker spot or when he's in one-on-one post-up isolation, he does, it's not just against a mismatch. You get Marc Gasol on him, he'll put Marc Gasol in the blender, and I don't know, Taj Gibson, I can't say enough good things about. And then you want to talk about the off-court stuff. Taj is, just because of a different type of personality, a softer type of personality, but also on Jimmy Butler's good graces, Taj is just great. He's just gnarled grinder. You can just tell. I mean, that dude,
really
he's
culture
lives
guy.
For this. Yes, great culture guy.
I know it's very cliche, but really good culture guy, especially with what they're trying to do now. And he's a guy who's not going to break the box score with any insane numbers, but. If you look over the course of a season, there's just not really any shift from game to game on what he's going to bring. And having a guy who brings that stability, especially when you have young guys early on, Towns was still kind of sporadic on what he would produce, especially on the defensive side. And you have Wiggins, who's a little sporadic. Having a guy who you can depend on for certain numbers is solid.
He played one bad game this year, one really bad game, and it was against the Brooklyn Nets. And if you look over this past month, the one game that sticks out of how did they lose that? And it was that Brooklyn Nets game, and Taj Gibson played really bad. Ton of turnovers, just wasn't catching the ball, couldn't get anything to go in around the basket. And I just think I kind of put that in the same been as I do that Indiana and Detroit game back-to-back where they were without Jimmy Butler, and you were kind of like, wow, this team is off without Butler. And without Gibson, that they were really off too. And maybe he's from Brooklyn. It was like coming home. Maybe there's some of that element. I'm not sure. But he played really bad. Like, I think Gibson is – obviously, he's not like the most valuable player on the team.
He started off because he couldn't drive himself around in Brooklyn. I'm just kidding. I don't want to bring that up again.
I got that joke that probably no one does. But, he's just been phenomenal for the Timberwolves. His,
very solid under the radar signing that went down over the offseason.
Oh, and we all said this is a bad deal. Everyone said that's too much money for Taj Gibson.
I underestimate him. I'm gonna be fully honest. I underestimate him. He's been huge. I will be the first
and
one to say I was
center.
Wrong.
He's a center. Taj Gibson is a center. He's not a power forward because he used to be power forward in Chicago. Towns is power forward. Gibson's the center. That's my heel I'm dying on.
Last grade before we head out here, Jamal Crawford, I have him as an A just because I think if he played about seven more minutes a game, I was talking with Mitch about this the other day. If he played seven more minutes a game, I really think that he would have the stats to contend for Sixth Man of the Year award. And he's just a really great piece off the bench. He's the only one averaging over three-point attempts on this team. He's the only one averaging over four three-point attempts, so that he gives the team a really much-needed range, and I think he's solid in just what he does on and off the court. He's another one of those kind of like Taj Gibson vets in the locker room. I think he's really a great playmaker. I think he's a guy you can go to if you know you need buckets in crunch time. You think about the overtime against Denver, and Jimmy Butler was doing everything, but there was also a clutch bucket from Jamal Crawford when Jimmy Butler dribbled himself into the triple team. And I just think if he had just a few more minutes out on the floor, he'd have the stats for Sixth Man of the Year. So he gets an A grade from me.
I'm with you. I think it's funny. He is what he was in L.A. The shot selection's bad. The percentages aren't great. The defense is bad. But he's a guy you love having on your team. It clearly matters. It's very important for that second unit. And I've said this probably to you before. I think he's just a phenomenal person. That's that's pretty clear in every time I've interacted with him, and just listening to more importantly the other players what they think of him. And he's huge. And the confidence he has in which to go out there and play is also been crucial for the second unit. My one issue with him. And it's not even an issue with him. It's what the other four guys do when he's out there. Is that you'll just kind of find sometimes where he'll find himself in isolation at like 15 seconds after the shot clock, and the guys will just start spreading out. The other four guys will just kind of go flat on the baseline, and it's like, okay, Jamal does have isolation ability. I'm not denying that, but we have time to continue to look for something else here. Give him a screen. There's 15 seconds. Do something like. Jamal Crawford is a very good isolator at the end of the shot clock because he'll be able to get a shot off. But there's almost too much of a reliance on his isolation game, I think, with the second unit. If they could, I don't know, temper that down a little bit, but all the other guys are like, oh, Jamal's good. He's got isolation. Like, let him go. But
he doesn't need us.
Yeah, he doesn't need us. Flat. Go flat. But, no, I'll go like A-, just because I'm too much of a stat head to like totally give what he's doing a thumbs up. But I love what he's brought to the team.
I know
too.
Some of the numbers are bad, but if you look at it, there are like 5-6 games where if he doesn't have 20 points off the bench, they lose that game by like 10.
For sure.
I just don't think there's a lot of guys in the NBA where you can look and say, you know what? I can swallow some bad shots because you won us six games, and there's not a lot of guys off the bench that do that for you.
And he seems to just recognize when that moment is. It's like, oh, things are stalling out a little bit. Time to go do my thing.
Yeah, it's not like in the fourth quarter. It's like in the third quarter. It was like, you know what? I really need to be great in this third quarter for us to win the next one, for us to win the next quarter. And that's something that is so valuable and has really fleshed out its value over the course of the season. That's all my grades. I know we went a little long on this episode, but I wanted to get to every single player and not grade in chunks of position or something like that. So I thought it was valuable, and thanks for slogging through it with me, Dan.
Yeah, no problem. Hopefully we can do more in studio in the future. It's better.
Absolutely.
Probably
absolutely
sounds better, too.
It definitely does. This has been another Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast.